It's Wednesday, October 24th, 2007, and you're listening to episode 75 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 51 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name is John.
My name is Luke.
My name is Adam.
And
you have nowhere to go with this because you refuse to look up show topics.
You refuse to work, so we're screwing around.
Not Fear the Boot Con.
Yes, not Fear the Boot Con. We have.
You see my poll here? I just made that happen. Keep going down.
We do have a list of some things for today.
You do have a good poll.
Not Fear the Boot Con. We're looking at having a convention here in St. Louis, probably on some Saturday, one day gaming con. There are just two things we've got to figure out. One is the date. And we're going to link a forum thread off of the show notes so you guys can go in and vote on a date. We're looking at sometime around March-ish, but we want to see when the most people can make it. And we hope you guys will come out. We're going to have hopefully a lot of gaming, some alcohol, great door prizes like an autographed jar of my urine.
Just some alcohol.
And some alcohol.
A lock of his hair.
And the other thing related to this is if you have some ability to hook us up to make this happen, because here's the problem. This is our first time trying to plan a convention. So we right now are trying to figure out all the logistics stuff, like where are we going to have this? Where is the alcohol going to come from? We could use some support from some local gaming shops. So if you have contacts with any angle of this, catering, location, gaming stores, you're from a gaming company and want to be able to sponsor this on some level, please send an email to adam@feartheboot.com, who has graciously agreed to head all this up. And he's giving me his funny look now, but last night he agreed to head this up. So
Adam's been drinking.
So anyway,
surprise, surprise.
Shoot something to adam@feartheboot.com, letting him know the short stories. We are going to do this. We are just trying to figure out exactly where and when. We want to congratulate Tony Mast, good friend of the show.
Woo!
Wife gave birth to a little baby girl, Erin, about this week and a week and a half ago.
But it was last Thursday because he called us during the podcast.
Yeah. That's true.
These shows run in delay, so by the time the show's released, this news will be about 2 weeks old. But Tony, he and his wife gave birth to a baby girl, so be sure.
It was really more his wife.
It was mostly his wife. Tony did participate a little bit, but most
of the
baby...
It was more towards the beginning. Though.
Yeah, most of the baby came out of his wife. So be sure to stop by our forums and send him a congratulations notice. The spoof contest, which we are coming to a close on. So if
we have one entry now.
Two entries.
Oh, wait, two. I didn't see the second one.
When did we get the second one?
We got the second one like a day ago as of this recording. Not as of the release, but as of the recording, we got it about a day ago. So if you've got any last moment entries, we'll extend this a little bit longer. Get them to us. We're still hoping to announce the winner in very early November. And last of all, Worldwide Wing Night 3 coming up on Saturday, November 10th. We actually have a location for St. Louis. We have a reserved room at a restaurant called Cyberg's, which we will post directions to for those of you that are joining us in St. Louis. The only thing they told us is we have to spend a minimum of $200.
Which Adam and I will accrue in our own beer tabs.
Yeah, looking at previous Worldwide Wing Nights with smaller attendances, this is not going to be a problem.
And they serve shark at Cyberg's, and it's very good.
Yeah, it is very good.
It's the only place I've had shark
and
before.
Let me toss this out there. I'm looking for a designated driver for Adam plus two on the way there and Adam plus three on the way home.
Whoa.
What?
Whoa.
Three? Plus three. Plus two on the way there, I mean.
Well, who's the third on the way back? I mean, how are you?
Melina.
Wait, Melina's not going with you?
No, she's not going with me. Oh. She's going to be in Wentzville for the day at some...
Wentzville? What the hell is she doing out in Wentzville?
I have no idea. She goes out there with her dad and...
I'll give the cougar of the night the pleasure of driving my drunk ass back.
You may wake up the next morning with a 40-year-old woman, but as long as you're okay with
that's
that...
That's the goal, baby. Yeah.
All right, as long as you're okay with that. See, I mean, for me, that's not a plus. That's a divorce, so...
No, you're married. But
if you're okay with that...
You don't have my cougar crosshairs.
I think you should have seen him at the bar on Friday. He was knocking down cougars to get up to the karaoke mic.
Left and right.
I think it's not an issue of...
The stage got rushed. I swear to God. Adam, tell them the stage got rushed.
The stage did get rushed with cougars. It was ridiculous.
It's not an issue.
Did they throw support hose at you?
Oh, no. They just threw the contents. at me.
It's not an issue if I don't have cougar crosshairs. It's an issue if I don't have cougar clearance.
You got to work on that.
This is Total War without any pretense. Clearance is gone.
I have to call Carla down.
We're at DEFCON 1, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
No, it's funnier when she's not here.
No, it is.
We talk about her and she's upstairs and she can hear us.
Yeah. Well, she's watching TV right now or something, but really that's not important because she's not part of the show. So.
Sorry, Carla.
All right. So anyway, once again, all these announcements, if you go to the show notes, we will have links to forum posts that have more details. So be sure to stop by there. We are still in our campaign to try and keep these announcements down to
under 6 minutes.
Yeah. Wow. Well, we're a little over.
That's about average.
Well, we chatted more this time.
3 to 5 minutes was the goal we were shooting for. So we're basically okay.
Hey, it's not 20, so we're improving.
Yeah.
All righty.
Let's head on into the meat of the topics that we didn't talk about beforehand.
Right.
Thanks,
absolutely.
Dan.
Well, fortunately for you, I am more prepared than you are, Luke. I appreciate you writing 75 and underlining it on the big board.
Hey, I asked 12 times, hey, what are we talking about tonight? What are we talking about tonight? And Dan's like, no, don't worry about it.
I've had two pints of Bud Light and the margarita.
Dan didn't become the one who sounds smart when we all sound stupid by telling us the topics, Luke. Please sit down and listen.
Yes. We talked last time about campaign rules.
Did we?
We did.
I have no recollection of this.
Me neither.
Okay.
I was writing a paper. All right, let me...
Well,
I was knee deep in African AIDS.
You know this because you were telling me that you're putting this team together of people to finish your MechWarrior Mercenaries project.
Yeah, actually,
it may shock you to learn that those people found out about your project through a podcast you're on.
No, there was no shock. Did I or did I not preface that statement with, as was the desired outcome?
Yeah,
people are offering to help me with this project.
So for those of you that still like Adam, he's manipulating you. He is. Insulting your intelligence and manipulating you at every turn, I only see one possible response, one possible punishment. Adam at Fear
Help
the Boot,
Adam out.
Adam at FearTheBoot.com. It is time to cease the furry porn and begin the bear porn. So,
hairy.
So please bombard Adam with all of that you can find over this coming week.
And speaking of emails from last week, I got two or three people who emailed me while they were listening, like, hey, dude, you got to check out this game, Rain. It's everything you talk about. Then later they email back, like, I should have listened more before I sent that. And then I got the one guy's like, I've looked everywhere for this game called Rain, R-A-I-N. I can't find anything about it. I'm like, it's R-E-I-G-N, as in the Reign of Kings, not Chocolate Rain Rain.
Well,
chocolate
I mean, you rain. Probably should have specified that in the show, you know.
You can tell by my inflection.
There are three spellings of rain. I mean, and that's without getting into the weird ones like R-A-Y-N-E. So you probably
Is a game called that, like Blood Rain or something.
Yeah, Blood Rain, yeah.
It's a video game, a terrible Uwe Boll movie.
I went to Luke's house over the weekend.
I did too.
His wife has a Prince-themed bathroom.
It is terrible.
His wife, I built that Prince-themed bathroom.
The purple rain painted walls. The Prince comic books framed.
And albums.
Oh.
Gold and purple.
Luke, you are in a seriously messed up marriage.
That we love each other very much. And my wife
doesn't
loves
justify
Prince.
That sort of atrocity.
Well, I think in this kind of situation, you have to look at...
You'll know this is the bathroom in the basement, back in a dark corner. This is our main
bathroom.
I think
you have to look at this kind of relationship and be like, wow, Luke's gone to all this effort to keep that chick. There must be something going on there.
There is.
Some hidden talent we're not privy
some
to.
Some hidden trapeze artist talent that gets manifested 5 times a day.
She's got to be. Either there's a massive dysfunction you have that she's putting up with, or your wife's a wildcat. I don't know which is the case.
Maybe both.
If Carlos decorated a room with a Prince theme,
with Carlos it'd be Star Trek, though.
Well, the only thing
that'd be acceptable. In fact, that's encouraged.
The only thing that would help me about that is it would make certain activities a whole lot easier. I wouldn't need
there'd be less bargaining.
I wouldn't need reading material to, you know, bridge the gap between beginning and end. It just
I don't even know what
I don't even know what you're talking about now. I'm really confused.
I was with you to the reading material.
I'm talking about taking a dump, you dumbass.
Oh, it's another repetitive metaphor for anybody counting. Boom, boom.
Damn it, Luke. You keep getting closer and closer to your mic, and I keep turning you down further and further.
Oh, I'm making you work hard. That's sad.
Yeah, no. You're going to make Levelator work hard.
Don't wear yourself out over there.
All right. So anyway, last time we talked about campaign rules, and one of the little thoughts that we left at the end of the episode written on the big board before it said 75 underline that we did not actually cover, but we had up there, Tuco, what are you laughing about? It's your failure. But
failure, that is success. 75 underlined. What more do I
know exactly?
I have no other role.
We had one other thing written up there about campaigns that we actually did not get to cover, which is ending a campaign.
Mm.
All right.
Oh, has anybody here actually ended a campaign?
Well, yes, once. The semester ends or two people have a terrible breakup and then the campaign's over.
All right. Yeah, okay. All right. All right. Hold on. Let's clarify. Has anybody gotten to the end of their campaign?
Right. Yes, once.
All right.
I have as well, a couple times. But I agree with you. Let's separate the end of campaign from the absolute abortion of a campaign. Let's separate the two. Somebody gets pissed off and doesn't show up anymore, or you guys get distracted by the shiny new book and dump the game. That does not count as an end of the campaign. We are talking about a planned, intentional, decided, the story is over. Okay, so we're specifically talking about that. I have seen campaigns all the way through to their logical, intended conclusion.
I have gamed in these games twice.
In your short years of gaming, that's actually pretty impressive.
Yeah,
I know.
That's a pretty good hit rate right there.
Yeah, that is an amazing
number might be one. It's almost two. I came to the eve of the last game before it imploded one time, but that doesn't count, so my number's still one.
All right, Luke, I'm going to be nice to you, and this time I'm going to say Adam's stories are all dumb. So why don't you go ahead and tell me about your one campaign that you saw through to the end?
Well, it's...
And stop hitting the microphone cord against the table! Somebody here has to edit these things!
You know these things really bother me. We've been through this. I have trouble with these microphone cords.
Really, it really bothers me when there's sound noises on the podcast.
Sound noises? You
know, as opposed to the other kind.
Sounds on the podcast? Damn. All right, now Luke.
I've talked about this several times. The one campaign that I've seen through to its end has been my Necessary Evil campaign, where the aliens invade Earth, kill the superheroes, supervillains have to save the world, and my supervillains did. They didn't really save it so much as inherit it. But it took about a year and a half, and we came to the end. They saved the world. Done. Everybody was happy.
That was a lame story, Luke.
I've told it three or four times now.
The point here, though, is this is an oddity. That with most campaigns I've seen, it's one of two things. It's either an ongoing, indefinite campaign where there really never was an intended ending to begin with.
Yes.
That it's like, we're just going to play these characters for the next 5 years. When one story ends, another one begins. There is no end to the
campaign.
And
at some point, people crap out and get bored in that joke.
Let me go ahead and toss out there, I don't want to play in that game.
That's how most of them are. I like campaigns like that, but that's not the point. The second kind is the unintended end. And this is far more common, where there's a falling out between two people. Somebody gets too busy. Somebody moves away. You pick up, this is the one that's more common. Somebody says the forbidden thing, which is, hey, this is pretty cool. But you know, I've got a great idea for such and such campaign.
Man, that happened at dinner.
That right there is the execution. That is the death sentence of a campaign. So we're not talking about that. I, Luke, have also seen, as far as I can recall, only one campaign through to its intended end.
Mm-hmm.
Only one. And I have been game mastering now for something like 20 years, almost 20 years now. And I have only seen one campaign in all of my years come to its intended end.
You should game with me.
I've been GMing a little over 12 years now. And most of them have died. Either we get busy and break up, like I said, or I get burned out and I stop running, or more likely, especially in the last few years, I run out of time.
I think some of this is scope. And I say that because if you have a campaign where it's only intended to run for 3 sittings or 5 sittings, or let's even say like a dozen sittings.
Yeah, that's about what my semester-long campaigns are. They run for about 10 games and then they're over.
It's real easy to push through to the end. But typically, the campaigns that I take that back. There's two campaigns I've seen to the end. But typically, the campaigns that I design, they're not meant to run for 5 years or 10 years or some indefinite period. But they are meant to run for 6 to 12 months. And it is very, very hard to keep a gaming group together for that long of a period of time.
How is 5 to 10 years an indefinite period?
Well, it's a long period.
Groups of friends seldom last 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, think about all the changes in terms of the people you hang out with over the past 5 years. You'll pretty quickly get, you know. So I think tip number one is if you want to see a campaign to the end, you have to know your group and know yourself and set a realistic expectation that if you have a group that has ADD about what game they play, you're probably...
This is common.
Yeah, this is very common. You're probably better off doing one of two things, which is either in planning a short campaign to begin with, or what we have come to do, which is forbid talk of other games. That if you're we're playing a game of D&D and someone's like, man, I got a great idea for a battle check game, we instantly begin stoning the person.
I permit talk of other games within my college games because we schedule them by semester. No one has any delusions of another game starting before mine ends at winter break.
Yeah, I'm bad about this.
So they talk
this.
About like a Star Trek game they want or a Western game.
Let me go ahead and toss out there, gentlemen, that we were planning on playing a D&D game. And then somebody said, I want to play Battletech.
No.
And then
that was different.
Oh, at dinner tonight.
Somebody said, I want to take the Kaplan LSAT course. I'm going to be out of commission for a month.
At dinner tonight, did somebody or did not somebody say, well, maybe I'll run a Battletech game instead.
Yeah, but you're missing.
Hey, I just see symptoms.
No.
You're
seeing a symptom and calling it the disease.
You're leaving a chain of events out of here. I mean, this is like Truman woke up one morning in Newt, Japan. Yeah. Yeah, there's a little bit that led up to this.
Son of a bitch.
And what happened, to clarify this for listeners, is we had a game we were planning to do of D&D.
And we were ready to roll with this in, like, September.
Yeah, we were ready to roll with this, like, tonight. And what happened is one by one, we had this scheduled for Sunday night. And everyone's like, well, I can't make this Sunday. Well, I can't make the next Sunday. Well, I can't make four Sundays in a row. So pretty soon, we had to drop that game completely and find some other game to fill in the gaps where if somebody's not there that Sunday, it's not a big crisis. Because this D&D game was going to be pretty character-driven. So if somebody was not there, it was a big deal. So at this point, I propose, how about playing a Battletech game or Shadowrun game or something in the interim where it doesn't really matter as much if somebody doesn't show. So you're leaving out a step or two there.
Actually, but don't worry.
Bucko.
I included many faces, motions, and beer bottles passing over my face.
Yeah, so. You did. And fat lot of help that is to listeners who, you know, can only hear audio and can't see all of your clever
little
gestures.
I think that's the intent. Call me crazy on
that
one.
They can hear my heavy breathing because of my terrible asthma, though.
I am the worst kind of GM when it comes to this.
Asthma, is that what they call it now?
Yeah.
Nah.
I am the worst kind of GM when it comes to this because I like the big scope. I like to think of campaigns lasting, you know, a few years, and I think in terms of that, and then it never, and of course, it never happens that way.
A few years?
So I've got, well, I like the big picture, but I've gotten better about it. I've gotten to where I think of things in smaller story arcs, and especially in the last couple of years, a lot of the major game companies have actually realized that most people don't play for that long, so they've put out campaigns that are designed to be run in a year or two, you know, like...
I have to completely concur with Luke that my biggest failing as a game master in terms of wanting to see a campaign through to the end is I tend to overreach. That I tend to want campaigns that are bigger, badder, longer, and more involved than my friends who are now in their young adult life can actually commit to do.
Yep.
Wait, young adult? Who are you talking about?
You dumbass. I mean, what are you, middle-aged?
Wait, hold on. Wait, did I miss a single game?
No.
No, but...
I don't miss games.
Your wife?
that's not Adam,
right,
though.
All right, all right, what all, right is she? All right. Actually, you know what? This is a perfect opportunity to defend that position that my wife caused the breakup of the last game. Because it didn't happen that way. She missed a couple games, she was not the breakup of that gaming group.
No, I will agree with you on the latter point, but not the former. She missed about 2/3 of the games.
Hey,
I will agree with
you.
She
did not cause the collapse of that game.
No,
so what did?
Mike?
So, I can't disagree with
all
you.
All right.
I missed the story.
Now, here's the second thing. So first of all, first piece of advice is know your reach. The second piece of advice is you have to know what the campaign is. Okay, what do I mean by that? Just like when you sit down for a particular sitting and you've got a plot in mind for that 2-hour, 4-hour, 6-hour, 8-hour sitting, you have to have
8 hours.
Dude, we used to game for 12 to 14 hours.
Yeah. People are ridiculous.
Back in the old days, that's how it happened.
I ran a 4-hour job last Sunday, and it about killed me. It's the longest as we've gone this semester.
I am best of 4 to 6.
The difference between that is that if you listen to their stories of the old games, people break out into groups and go LARP.
No,
I'm serious.
No.
There's no LARPing. There's
no. I'm talking not us, but in the stories of their old games that last 12 hours, people go and LARP.
No, that's not always true.
No, that's not
no,
well,
that's
my
not,
experience
not true at all. We had Battletech games where, believe me, these were not conducive to the LARP.
Where you would have large quantities of time where the GM is not involved, correct?
No, absolutely not true.
No.
And it was a lot of character interchanges.
That is absolutely not true.
Yeah, I don't know where you're getting this.
I will cut the audio.
There were games like that. There were games like that. I'm not disagreeing with you. But what I am saying is that was not a universal truth.
What usually happened was you'd go spend the night at your buddies and you'd play D&D till 3 or 4 in the morning.
This was back when people had a long attention span. You know, when we could stay on topic and...
I don't know anybody like that.
Yeah, I'm quickly losing all the people I knew like that. but the point being that we could actually stay on topic. Now, getting back to what I was saying, you've got to know where the campaign is going. The campaign has to have a beginning and the campaign has to have an end. And you accept that that end may move a little bit because of the fact that the players may go in directions you didn't expect.
They should anyway. If you know how the book ends before you even start, go open up Microsoft Word and tell your story. Don't bother players with it.
One of the only two campaigns I've seen all the way to its end was the D&D campaign. And I've mentioned the story before, where the players actually ended up kind of turning what was intended to be the main bad guy and joining his side. And I had to completely shift the campaign. But I still knew that there was this moment in history where the campaign ends. Let's go back to my World War II analogy earlier where I made the comment about Truman. We know the end of World War II is some group of nations wins, whether it's the Axis or the Allies. Somebody wins this war and life goes on from there. And that you could call the end of your campaign. Now, you may not know which side wins, and you may not know which side the players are going to be when it ends, and you may not know what things the players will have done to influence that end, but there is still at least some kind of vague moment in history that you can describe as the end of the campaign, because if you can't describe that, then where the hell does the campaign end anyway?
But, well, let me
when
argue
everyone
with you.
Dies to, in a random encounter?
Roxwell, everybody dies. Let me argue with you a bit here, because in my, like we've talked about, I like to run sandbox type games, and the approach to that's a little bit different because we might just play until we do get tired of it, because it is player driven until they meet their goals, and that's that. Last time we didn't reach that point because we hit a point where I got really busy and the campaign became very work intensive because I started doing really, really cool things. I didn't have the time to invest into that.
Well, see, and maybe, all right, maybe if I run with that for a minute, there's your vague end of the campaign of when the characters have reached maturity, so to speak. That if you have a character...
I've never had a character reach maturity, ever.
Yeah, that's never been a problem. Don't worry about it.
By maturity, I mean full growth here. That if you have a character-driven story, once the character has reached a certain point of realization or a certain point of accomplishment, that's going to be the end of the campaign. Mm-hmm. That this character's story, without belaboring minutiae just to the point of total torment, but this character's basic story has been told. He's become the prince of the city. He has avenged his father's death. He has basically run out of things.
See,
he's kind of retiring from the world of adventure.
I can see that in some games, but if you take a game like Vampire, where characters are literally eternal, if they can live, you know, not be killed by something, then even if you do reach Prince of the City, you have a lot of stories to tell there. You can reach the end of a story arc of something you want your character to do. Like, I've redeemed myself. I've done this.
But you can hit cut on the movie reel and then write all the extended universe you want.
You can always come back
Luke
later.
Redeemed Vader and blew up the second Death Star. And then a bunch of people wrote a bunch of novels about how he made this academy and trained some new Jedi.
Damn,
but the story was over.
A podcast host, too.
What?
Dude, you get around.
I do get around.
Oh, yeah, you're okay.
Actually, when he started that, I thought the story was about me and then
I didn't remember that.
I thought it was going to be entertaining.
I knew it wasn't.
Return of the Jedi was entertaining. I can sing Yub Nub.
You can.
In Ewokish.
You know what makes me sad is there's going to be a whole generation of people who don't know that song.
I know.
Dude, when we go to karaoke on Friday, you should see they have it.
They don't have.
We should add that as an event at Not Fear the Boot Con.
Yes, Ewok celebration party at the end of it,
where
with stormtrooper helmet xylophones.
Yes, and John will sing the entire Yub Nub song.
Oh, thanks for volunteering me for that. But
dude,
for my
you'll
PS,
be assaulted by cougars.
You're like the only person in
the
world.
There's gonna be cougars at Not Fear the Boot Con.
Absolutely, I'm gonna be there. Go to
Johnny
the bar.
G is a cougar magnet. You have
a
no
cougar
idea.
Interdictor cruiser.
I don't.
He was like Moses.
I pulled him out of
hyperspace. A sea of cougars.
Yeah.
You should have seen him stacked up on the sides.
And getting back to that once again, if you are in the St. Louis area and you've got a catering business, a venue.
Or you're over 30 years old and a woman and married or single looking for Johnny G.
Or you're a gaming
swinger is welcome.
Or you're a gaming shop that wants to sponsor not feartheboot.com. Please get in touch with us, Adam at feartheboot.com, and let us know, because we are going to need some help to pull this off.
The collective
Adam. And if you are a person who's going to attend, get on that forum and vote on the date so we can try and accommodate you and get as many people as we can.
This sounds like an announcement.
In and out of town.
This is a middle episode announcement.
What happened to the topic?
This is what happens when we have notes.
This is all what right. happens. Chaos. Shut Anarchy. Up. You be quiet.
No, Chaos changed his name to West.
Yes. Oh, blah, 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 blah.
All right.
That kid gets more air mentionings than anyone. What? Dan?
That's because he's the top poster on the forum.
I know.
I think we mentioned Chris Hussey more.
No, we haven't.
No,
we
now we're tied this episode. Yeah. Say somebody else now.
West.
Chris Hussey.
Chaos. Chris
John Hussey. Romero.
Pinkinator.
Chris Hussey. Anyway.
Welcome to the most boring part of Fear the Boot ever, ladies and gentlemen.
It's
all right. Bring in a campaign.
The Thunderdome of boring.
Bring in a campaign to it. You know, I'm trying to go somewhere with this. But
you're going there slowly. Drive faster.
There's just a shortage to shut the F up around here.
Drink more. You're tall boys.
What's
like
happening is your hair
full.
Adds all that wind resistance. You can't go very
Look,
fast.
When you're old, bald, and bitter, don't come to me for locks of love.
I'm not going
to
be old, bald, nor will I be old. I won't be bald or bitter.
I'll be bald by the time I'm 40.
No, I won't be.
You're going to be bald.
No.
The power of my hair will destroy you.
The power of Cain will
Look what happened to the power of John Romero's hair. He went on to make Daikatana after. That's where you're headed. After Fear the Boot, you're going to make this horrible, horrible podcast.
Daikatana.
I bet there's no official Daikatana podcast out there. We could beat people to it. In fact, we are officially
Dan's
the Daikatana
gonna make,
podcast
Dan's
right
gonna
now.
Make Fear the Toot.
I'm going to be like the D. Snyder of podcasting. But
D. Snyder's popular again, so you hush up.
I don't even know who that is.
You don't. That's awesome.
Hey, you know what? I'm
That's
laughing, bad. But I don't know who it is.
The lead singer, Twisted Sister.
Who?
Oh my God! Come on, people. He's also on all the reality. He was on all the reality
and
shows.
He's got long.
Hey, how old are
he's
you,
He's got
Grandpa?
Really long hair and whatever. Anyway, so point.
Let's move on to something slightly interesting.
Go on, Dan. I'm sorry. I'm slowing the bus down.
Yes, you are. You're slowing down the short bus.
Oh, I'm so heavy.
The two things that we've come up with so far is number one, to know your reach, and number two, to also have some kind of a vague ending to the campaign in mind, to understand what it means for this campaign to end. All right. So do we have any advice on how to actually get there? How to define when your campaign has ended? How to work?
Random encounters until they're crying from boredom.
It all depends. It all depends on what game you're playing and what your goal is. I mean, my campaign ended in Vampire is going to be a lot different than in Necessary Evil or in Rippers or in
Anastasia. All right, but given that, can you offer some kind of general advice?
Well, it needs to be something climatic and memorable. They need to, you know, when it comes to an end, it should be a true Hollywood ending, I think.
For example?
We'll go back to my Necessary Evil game. We'll break our gaming story rules, and so many people are talking.
No, we won't.
Well, as long as we keep them short and relevant, I'm fine with that.
No, Necessary Evil, we, at the end of the camp, they had taken on pretty much all these low-level thugs, had worked their way up, basically became a big resistance cell against these aliens that invaded Earth. And they decided to take on the mothership when they were ready. And they did so in a way I had no idea they were going to do. It was they completely surprised me. It was a brilliant plan, and it worked, and they won. They blew up the motherships, and it was like, well, that's a campaign. You've driven off the aliens. The Earth is yours. Enjoy.
I think to some extent, to bring a campaign to a successful close also requires, at least in my experience, and this is going to be different from gaming group to gaming group, but in my gaming groups, has required a sort of quiet collusion between the players and the game master. In one of the campaigns that I saw brought to a close, we had sort of a quiet collusion going between the players and the game master, where really there were two things going on. One was there was this galactic plot that was unfolding. It was a sci-fi campaign. There was this galactic plot that was unfolding, which we as the players did not entirely know everything about. The game master, of course, was holding back some of his cards, and we were discovering things as we went along. But at the same time, when we began the game, our characters had certain flaws, and we had certain goals in mind for those characters, many of which we expressed to the GM. And when the campaign ended, it just so happened to work out. And some of this was just the stars were in perfect alignment. I'm not sure we could recreate this if we wanted to. But it just so happened that come the end of that campaign, that the galactic plot ended at the same time that our characters worked through their personal issues and conquer their personal demons. And by the end of it, I think my character was the only character left alive. But, you know, everything kind of came together, like talk about it, and then this climax all at once, where if this was a novel, the reader would have walked away accepting this was the end of the story. That one character survived, and, you know, obviously having survived, his life is going to go on. But really, the part that's worth talking about is basically over. And I think that right there is an important part of making these campaign endings work.
It's tough, though. I mean, with the time and schedules these days, running a successful campaign is harder and harder, which is why people go play MMOs, I guess, because they can complete their story in their own time.
Well, or not have a story and get some purples.
Yeah, exactly. Or exactly. There is no story at all.
No, no, you don't make up your own story when
sure,
you do
there's
that.
A story. When I'm hunting
up purples, I'm always...
Nefarian is sitting on top of BRD. You gotta kill him again. He's just back now.
You only heard him last time.
Yeah, even though his dead, lolling tongue was spilling out of his crushed
even
skull.
Even though I looted his tongue.
Yes.
I want to talk real briefly about what a campaign ending in my mind should not be before we move on to the next
one. Everybody wins.
Rocks fall, you die.
Rocks fall, you die.
Exactly. In my mind, a campaign ending is not by some random chance of luck or some stupid random encounter.
Boom! And then?
The whole party is dead for no particular reason.
I rolled a natural 000 at Festivus Con in Derek's game.
In my mind, this is...
Thanks for sharing.
Those are memorable.
You rolled a percentile die?
Yeah.
In D&D? What for?
I don't even remember. But I rolled the perfect 100.
Man, I can't think of what you need that for in 3rd edition. I'm sure there's something.
Okay, well, this is a dumb story. So
spell failure.
That's twice I get that. Twice tonight.
But if you just kill the characters for no particular reason, then...
No, that's a stupid ending.
Well, first of all, I think you're fostering that player versus the GM mentality, which we have spoken against repeatedly. And secondly, on top of that, I think there's also no story ending to that. You've not grown the characters. You've not concluded any plot points. You've just simply wiped people out, and I don't know that that's really good into a campaign.
That's your statement about the nature of reality.
Now, Adam, before you were showing off your empty Bud Light bottle to Luke...
We're doing some measurements, so we're working out the metrics on beer.
I know. But
we're having a little measuring contest.
A little pissing contest.
You said you had somewhere to go with this.
Yes, actually in the direct opposite direction of campaign endings, I started writing, probably preparing more notes for the game I'm running on Mondays. Than I ever have before in my life.
That's a good sign. That's good.
And it is a crap load of work.
Yeah, it's a lot of work.
Welcome
DMs
to GMing.
Do GMs do this every freaking time?
You should see.
Look at that episode thread where I post my notes for the last Star Wars
game. Yeah, I saw that.
That was my preparation.
Unfortunately, I'm not either. I think it's a combination of I'm not creative enough and not quick thinking enough to do that.
No effective GMing experience.
That's the third smaller than the first.
You should see my campaign prep docs, the stuff I have to give to players beforehand to get them ready for it. I mean, I write tons, and usually we narrow it down to something small so players will actually read it and do it. But I do a lot of work when it comes into campaign.
So I was going to ask you guys, who actually GM on a regular basis, what the hell? Like, is this something you regularly do?
Well,
or is there some sort of streamlined process that I just haven't figured out through my ingenuity?
I write 10 or 15 hard plot points. The players will maybe see 5 of them tops, and I just flesh out around them as I go.
My adventure notes are usually very short because I generally think in terms of scenes and various villains have everything I need right there. It's usually about a notebook page.
I'm not talking campaign notes.
Okay.
Because I'm running an actual module.
Plotting campaigns are easy.
Yeah, yeah.
Plotting the damn session itself is the hard part.
I'm planning for tomorrow's game. And I'm already at 4 pages.
No, you got that's exact opposite I have.
Really?
Yeah.
Seriously?
Really?
I work hard on a big picture, and I have no problems doing adventures. Adventures are easy. Working on the
I can write
the
a big campaign
a
because the little bastards in my player group can't derail me.
See,
I can just put it up on the screen.
All right.
I love
creating settings, so I create a lot, and I do that for fun.
All right.
I think there's two things you got to know here. One is know the group. And the second thing is you got to know yourself.
Thank you, Sun Tzu.
Well, here's the point.
I have to know everybody involved. That boils down to
it. But here's the point. Over the years, I've had people ask me, how do I write my campaign notes? And if I sat here and thought about it, I could probably come up with half a dozen different methods that I have used to write the notes for my campaign and for the individual plots. And it really comes down to you just have to know, this is how much detail I need. This is how much I can BS. This is how specific I want to be. Or my players are going to derail me, so this is how vague I want to be.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Right now...
that should be the goal, in my humble opinion.
I say right now, the way I currently do my campaign notes, and this, like I said, this is varied from time to time in my GMing, but right now the way I currently do is I kind of do three things. The first thing I do before a game starts is I write down a campaign outline, or what I call the here's what's really going on. Here's the plots, here's the players, and by players, I don't mean the PCs. I mean the major players in the events.
Right. The dramatis personae.
Here's all the crap that's going on that nobody really knows about but is unfolding in the world. Then what I do is from there, I sit down and write the notes for that individual sitting. And I try to keep them kind of vague enough to where if the players go off track, it's not going to be a complete crisis. Or maybe I'll write into some contingencies. And then finally what I do is I might have, and this is an optional thing, I might have a little piece of paper that has some kind of random encounters. And I don't mean combat encounters, but just random events or things like, okay, if they're too far off the beaten track, here's something I can throw in their path just to get the action going again.
They can make anything a combat encounter.
Right. Well, yeah, that's true, but push them back on the path. I think some of this has to come down to what you want to get out of the campaign. If I look at like a movie or a novel,
zombies.
Well, but here's
Nazis
the point. I get
and bugbears.
You give me any genre long enough to think about it, and I can find you. Let's just take movies or novels, where novels within a genre, I can say, well, this one is ultimately a plot-driven novel. It's about the things that are happening, as opposed to this one that's a character-driven novel.
The Next Generation versus DS9 that continuity.
It's not about the plot, but it's about the development of the characters. It's about development of the plot.
So it's DS9.
For example, To Kill a Mockingbird is a character-driven story. Yeah, there's plot in there, but that's not what it's about. Really, the book is about the development of these characters and the development of the setting.
Right, right. Conversely, a zombie game isn't conducive to plot to character growth.
Well,
simply because... Okay.
But it might be.
It might be, but typically the default is that it won't be, because everybody you put in your backstory is probably already dead.
But see, I guess here's the point. Let's take a zombie game. If you are running a zombie game where ultimately there is a source to the zombie invasion, there's some secret umbrella corporation that they have to locate and they have to stop.
Thanks, Dan. I'm going home and playing RE4 tonight. And you've said that.
You know, and
don't watch Resident Evil Extinction.
I'm not going to. Good.
And there's all this conspiracy and all these people that are involved. You've got a plot-driven zombie campaign. But if ultimately these zombies are just coming from nowhere and it's a disease and there's really no hope and the best you can hope for is to survive and find some kind of purpose, then suddenly this does become a character-driven story.
Yeah.
That's very bizarre.
Look at Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah,
there's inexplicable and lacking in reason, but there is character development.
Well, most zombie movies are just a reflection of, you know, zombies are the catalyst. They're not the true villain. Oh, it's usually humanity is the villain. You're well aware. I see it in your ass.
I read The Walking Dead.
I read the prologue
to Walking Dead.
Let me have my own little lucature here, since Dan told me how he prepares games. I'm in two camps here. You know, if I'm running more of an episode-driven game, those are easy. Something like a module.
That's fascinating. Something else that I just thought of is...
Something else is fascinating. Okay. I'm cutting Battletech.
Oh, fascinating. Let's put that in the Urban Dictionary.
Yes!
Or the Fear the Buchinary.
The Suburban Dictionary.
Modules and episode-driven games, I have a very simple time with, because it is... But I don't get as much satisfaction from them, because usually the world is pretty well set, and you're just running, you're figuring out how the characters interact and what's going to happen that week. That's usually very easy to do. I work in scenes. Generally, I think, what needs to happen this session to drive things forward if we're working with a set plot? And I'll work out that main scene and see what can lead up to it and what can be after it. And knowing what the players have done in the past, see how they're probably going to approach it, which they almost never do, of course. So you always have to have some contingencies there. Generally, on a regular game, if I'm sitting down to a regular 4 to 6 hour game session, my notes might be 3 to 4 plot points on a single notebook paper with some notes there for here are the stats for what I need for the various NPCs are going to run into.
Oh.
That's it. I mean, I run
You're more creative than I am, though. It doesn't work.
I don't think that's true. I just think you're not trusting yourself enough. When it comes to something...
No, I think I'm actually pretty
well.
You must unlearn what you have learned.
Well, I say, I follow the longer side, that for a four-hour setting, I will have 2 to 3 pages typed, but some of that is for consistency's sake. This particularly comes up in space opera games, where I describe a warship as having a certain design and a certain crew complement, a certain complement of Marines, and guess what? 3 games from now, when they're thinking about trying to do a boarding action with that ship, that's going to come up. How fast is the ship? How many Marines are on here? How many crew members are there? And
oh, come on, it's Danvers. It's a big, big ship with a bunch of cannons that fires broadside and moves slow.
And All right.
Wait. Let me present this scenario to you.
My Lukature wasn't over, but you can go on.
Okay, go ahead.
Actually, I'm going to interrupt your Lukature with an Adam.
Welcome to Fear the Boot, Luke.
Yeah.
Fear the Luke.
I have played in the games that the group I am playing with has played in for the last couple years. And so I know the level of game reasonably that they expect. And I look at the module, which I'm trying to run, and it's a page and a half of Objective X. And I know a page and a half of information isn't enough.
This is the plot points we talked. I know what you're running. You know, I know how it's
I know
designed.
You know what I'm running.
A page and a half can be fine, but it can't all just be, okay, do this, and then do that, and then do that. You need characters. You need a setting.
Precisely.
You need rewards and penalties.
Exactly, and it doesn't all fit on a page and a half, and so I start writing.
Okay.
Yeah.
And because I'm not creative, this isn't a point for argument. I am not creative enough to come up with this stuff on the fly.
That's what I like about the plot points. That's what you're running as a plot point, basically, where it's a skeletal, it's a skeletal outline, and you put in what you need. You can customize any way you want. If you're not wanting to do that, you're kind of screwed. That's a problem.
I agree. Go ahead.
That's what I have to say about that. But on the flip side of the episodic games is the player driven game, the sandbox game, where all my work goes into months beforehand of I design all the major players, all the major NPCs, the history of the setting, what have you, and then drop the players in and usually give them a few hooks to go on, let them rule the day, and it's like watching dominoes fall. Okay, they did this, this guy reacts this way, which causes this person to react this way, and you see what chaos evolves from the players being there, and that always ends up coming back and feeding into future adventures. It doesn't really, it's not conducive to a campaign that it has a ending, though, unless you talk a lot about what the players want. Well, like, kind of like we did earlier.
I think it could have an ending, but now you're allowing the players to entirely dictate what that ending is. That when the player comes to you and says, you know, look, okay, my vampire is immortal, his story goes on, but this is the story I wanted to tell.
Right. There's ways to end it. You can end it at certain points. Just like, we talked about it earlier.
Right. And just like when I was playing a mortal character who survived the campaign, obviously his story goes on. But this is the end of the story that I'm telling. And I think you can still hit a point.
Bilbo reaches for the tobacco jar and it's over.
But with a sandbox game, it's a lot of work early and then less work, and then you have to work hard again about halfway through and then more work again. I love that.
I don't know that I can play a sandbox game. I think that...
You could play it.
I can play a sandbox game.
I don't think I could.
Called SimCity 2000.
Simply because while all your work is up front, and I have no problem keeping track of all of the miscellaneous information from that point on, it's when the players start doing things... Then you have to come up with reactions from your NPCs.
You couldn't run it. You're saying you couldn't run a sandbox game.
Yeah. I was going to say,
running it, it's like I talked about early on, it's a whole different level of GMing, and it's very satisfying because you don't know what's going to happen. You're just as surprised as the PCs are. I mean, you've got to know your setting, and you have to know your NPCs and be ready to run them appropriately. When one of them randomly wants to go talk to the primogen you created in your document, but nobody's talked to yet because he's important now, and one of the players actually read the document he wrote and wants to use something from it, which never happens.
No, it never happens.
It never, ever happens. But,
unless you write a new spell
If you haven't GM'd a lot, you probably shouldn't run a player game.
Well, I think the three main problems that I have when it comes to GMing is, one, I've not GM'd a lot. Two, I don't think I'm that creative. And three, I don't think that quickly. I am awesome at long-term analysis. But long-term analysis doesn't work in a game when the player's like, all right, I do this. Okay.
Well,
you do
that's
it.
That's cool. You do it. Roll some dice.
Well,
yeah, you do it.
I think with 2 and 3, it's a level of confidence issue.
Yeah.
Oh, are we going to go back to that?
Yes. With 1, I think it's a lack of experience. And
I think that's the problem.
Given that confidence comes from experience in some way, I would actually like...
No, it doesn't have to. You can have a completely undeserved confidence.
Yeah, you can.
It's gotten me this far in life.
I would really link all of them together, that I think the more you GM, the less problem you're going to have with these kinds of things.
Yeah, it really just takes a little bit of practice, a little bit of time. Actually, what you need, what's that drink commercial we watched before we started? You need to drink it. That's
Power Thirst.
Power Thirst.
Power Thirst.
You run Power Thirst, you're running the best, you'll be the best GM in the room.
Yeah, man, I can friggin' light rave parties with my glowing sweat.
Glowing sweat.
You can launch a globe into Al Gore's head from your balls.
All right, so I'm going to have to link that one off the show notes now. So.
Oh, yeah. Crap. So, Adam, you need more confidence, buddy. Just run some games. You'll get with it.
I am running games.
I know, and everybody, yeah. And everybody
this is
knows.
Number four.
And to all the players that they're running under a first-time GM, cut them some slack. Help them out.
Yeah.
And
first off, all right, let's put this on the table. I'm not a first-time GM, though. This is number four. I don't think I'm getting better.
Well, have you run, how many adventures have you run? I mean, yeah. How many sessions are under your belt?
And how long did each of those three previous?
That's not much at all. That's little. Those
previous three campaigns. At least.
So two went for one, and two went for two sessions.
One went for two, one went for three.
Yeah. Okay. See, exactly. Those were not long.
Yeah.
That's not experience.
No.
But having said that, I don't know what I was going to say.
I know you know. You don't know what you're going to say.
He's going to say, "Believe in yourself."
You've got the power.
He's going to move into this. Oh, well, you have a confidence problem thing again.
Well, which is true, but that's actually not what I was going to get at. I don't remember what I was getting at, so maybe it'll come to me for the next few minutes, or not the next show.
I'll eat some smoke.
Here's my one tip to you. If some player does something and you're not prepared for it,
tell them no.
No. Oh, one, you should almost always say yes. Yes is always a good thing to say, but you can always say yes or yes, but. Remember that. But
what rule is it that says no means yes?
That's the no rape rule.
It's rule number six, and it's no is a mispronunciation of now.
Now, yeah, that's right.
That's actually what I was going to say.
But
in addition to Adam GMing, one of the other shocking things that's coming out of this is the game that he is GMing within which I and John are playing is a Savage Worlds game.
Savage Worlds module,
yeah.
No less.
Zombie module.
This is a game that was written post FASA. So
I bought them the books. That's the only reason they own it.
So Shane Hensley, this one's to you. Editing your interview episode sucked.
Well, it wasn't his fault.
It was Skype being bad.
Yeah,
I didn't actually make my one bit of advice to you yet. My one bit of advice to you was, if they do something that you're not prepared for, whatever your answer is, make it something interesting. Or better yet, just be a mirror and have the player. Oh, you're shaking your head.
Yeah, my bit of advice, you stop eating those damn chips after you're muting your mic.
I know, you cut out some awesomeness that I was saying earlier.
I know, you stop eating those damn chips.
I'll cut it out as long as you're not talking. It's cool.
All right.
Look at his face.
In several cases, I have been talking, so I had to mute your damn mic. Uh-huh. All right. We run a tight ship around here.
Yeah, we do.
Okay.
We run a tight
ship
something. It is not.
We run a tight ship with 340s of Miller High Life.
We run a ship with multiple masts and hundreds of sails and long cannonades.
And they fire from
broadsides.
I'm about to stand up and salute. If I wasn't wearing headsets, I would.
As long as you're wearing pants.
Damn, I love broadsides.
You know, we can just go watch Master and Commander once this is
over. You know, let me
it's
ask
a good
this.
Movie.
I take it the Danvers has broadside cannon battles. Is that true?
God bless, yes.
Good. Okay, you know what? I don't think it was ever been answered. I mean, I just assumed because you created the universe, you'd have something
you love in
there.
I've played Danvers twice. I've never seen broadside combat.
Really?
Yeah, well, the campaign didn't survive long enough, but...
Oh, there's no doubt in my mind that broadside combat was in the campaign.
It was
notes.
Coming. It was coming. It just, you guys...
How do you logically put that into a setting? A space setting, other than just, it's cool, I want to have it.
Ships are so big, they can't move quickly, so that's why they broadsided back in the Lord Nelson days.
The other thing is you're dealing with a large open space. You mean space? Yeah, exactly. There's absolutely relatively no barriers, so the question becomes...
I would go so far as to say no barriers.
So the question becomes, how can you bring the most weapons to bear at once? Well, if you have a ship that's designed down a long drive...
Are we really having this conversation?
Yes, we are. Shut up.
He asked. If you have a ship,
I explained in 10 words, and now Dan is just going.
If you have a ship that's designed down a long drive port,
you're saying a long shaft.
Therefore, it'd be best you have the most cannons on the broadside. The other option
so bigger is better.
Wait, if it doesn't matter though, why don't you just have like a big square plate full of weapons on one side? Because it's space, there's no barriers.
Because here's the thing: if you have it on the broadside, and that broadside starts going down, you can roll and fight with the other broadside.
Well, with my big square, you can do two. One side fires, you flip it over, and you're the other side fires.
Dan's making the fundamental thrusters. Assumption, as he did in the other episode, that spaceships will be cylindrical in nature.
My ship is square.
No, because human spaceships,
you're a Borg bastard.
Human spaceships are cylindrical in nature. The other races
They're cylindrical in nature now, because they have to be because of the way that the engines work.
Right.
They need all that space for the combustion.
Right, and the way that I have designed the drives into the future
is
the FTL drives are also very long in nature.
Frack me, it's the FTL drives.
Yeah.
Spin them up. Let's jump to the planet.
Since you asked.
And Adama's fiery chariot that he sees pummels towards the planet.
There's insufficient time in this episode for me to offer a treatise on war within Vandiverse.
Oh, Trisha Helfer, you are on my hard drive.
In aviators, I believe.
Oh, and out of them.
These three are going to shut the hell up, and the rest of you guys, we will catch next time.
Bye.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2007, fully owned by its hosts. Our theme song was written and performed by Tim White. Listeners are free to use the show in any non-commercial endeavor, as long as credit is provided to FearTheBoot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at FearTheBoot.com.